Welcome to LifeQuest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. I'm Dwight Lainhoff, and this is a program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. Welcome to this week on LifeQuest. For my parents' generation, the defining moment in their collective memory was December 7, the Pearl Harbor attack. I suppose for my generation, it was the assassinations of President Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and John Lennon. But for many today, it is September 11. My guest today is Jeanette Reynolds. She's author of the book, Where Were You on 9/11? She's been a guest on CNN, Fox News, NBC, and other media throughout the world. So, Jeanette, we welcome you to LifeQuest.
Thank you for inviting me, Dwight. It's a real pleasure.
Jeanette, I've got to ask you, where were you when you first heard the news about the attack there in New York?
I was in Montana, and I was listening to radio, which I normally do in the mornings, and so I did not have the TV on like most people did, it seems, that morning.
Mm-hmm. And what a shock. What was your reaction?
I had a friend that's in radio, by the way, call me and say, hey, you need to switch on the TV because there's something pretty amazing happening. And, of course, I turned it on, like many people, just when the second plane was hitting the second tower. So I was shocked. Some people process shock differently, mm-hmm. you know. For me, I kind of saw it, couldn't believe it like most, and then had to kind of deal with it later, and that's the whole premise of the book.
You're a journalist. You've done a lot of interviews on a lot of subjects, but this began to captivate you, didn't it?
It did, beyond what I expected or even could have anticipated. It just kind of took me. And I think that most newsies or journalists or people that work for CNN and carry a camera on their shoulder in a war-torn country, mm-hmm. you know, stories tend to kind of capture you. And this one, on many levels for me, again, unbeknownst to me while I was kind of processing it, it just kind of grabbed me and it just pulled me in. And it was unbelievable.
So it wasn't just an intellectual or a career exercise. It really had affected you personally.
That is probably the best way to describe it. Thank you, Dwight. It was not a career exercise by any stretch. In fact, I had just sold a large portion of my publishing business and was getting ready to make a direct 180 turn into a different career. And I really, the last thing I wanted to do was really collect more interview stories. I had owned an interview magazine mm-hmm. for nearly a decade. And I had kind of grown weary of the whole process of, you know, publishing and getting stories and interviewing people. And I almost was getting to the point where I could finish someone's sentence. So I knew it was time for me to kind of move on.
Right.
Then 9/11 happened, and it changed my world, changed my life.
It did change your world. It seems it changed your career or kept you going in a particular direction.
What it did for me was a week after the towers were struck, I had a call from the governor of our state, Montana, and she had a dinner at the White House that she needed a few people to attend in her absence, because at that time, the government was requesting that all governors and senators, politicians, whatever, stay put in their states, not move around, not do a whole lot because of the events that had happened, and they
right.
wanted people to kind of stay on alert. So myself and a couple of others were included in this invite, which was not expected at all. I kind of wondered, well, why did they choose me? There's so many other people that could go.
Mm-hmm.
But I was chosen, and I ended up going to Washington, D.C. around October 1st, and so that was literally 2 weeks, maybe 14, 18 days after the towers were struck. And then after our visit to the National Museum building, which was in lieu of the White House, because they had cut off all visits to the White House at that time
right.
for security, took the train the next day into Manhattan. And I was traveling with fellow Montanans, stayed at a hotel right off of Lexington Ave, and I called a friend in Manhattan who works there and said, hey, can you bring us down to this place called Ground Zero? Because they had just named it. That's what we did. We took the train downtown, and literally the rest is history. I just couldn't believe what we saw.
As you were seeing, as you were looking at such a time so close to the event, things had to be percolating in your mind, and your curiosity must have kicked in, right? About people who were there.
You know, what I observed the most was a very sullen, quiet thought, you know, invoked in their thought, New Yorkers, and I'd never seen that before.
All right.
I've been in New York many, many times, and it's kind of a hustle-bustle city and a lot of energy, and you either like that or you don't, but I've always kind of liked the energy of New York. But this was very different, and people were it was very quiet, and there were a crowd of us that came up out of the subway and just kind of stood a few hundred feet from this smoldering crater in lower Manhattan, with fire still looming, you know, 7-8 stories high, and firemen still working, battling this fire. It just kind of stunned. And, you know, you looked around in the crowd, and everyone was just, you know, either tears were coming down their cheeks still, or, you know, still 2 weeks later, and
right.
or just a hush was over the city. It was very compelling, and the whole spirit of the atmosphere, the area, was very, very peculiar, very different, something I've never experienced before.
And you must have sensed a change, actually, in soul, in character.
I did. I didn't realize it at first, and I think those things do hit you on a level where you're not maybe aware of it yet. You know, it surfaces, it percolates, as you said, later. And for me, you know, a lot of us, again, we process things differently. For me, I'm more of a, if I see a tragedy or something, I kind of observe, think about it, and then, you know, I shove it to the back because I, like most people, I have a job, I have to continue on with life. And so, you know, we tend to maybe push that stuff down, and then it'll rise later when we're under another challenge or another stress. And that's the interesting correlation about 9/11 for me, is that the revelatory event that happened is that everyone has a piece of their life that's broken. And 9/11 really made that surface for a lot of people. You know, the fragments that are broken in people's lives really surfaced during 9/11. Now, what that means is, even though I didn't have someone who I knew personally in the tower, or I don't know anyone, you know, family members that live in Manhattan, I
right.
certainly had a lot of friends there that were affected, physically standing there and seeing this tragedy, even the after effects 2 weeks later, is just as compelling as experiencing it. Now, you know, I'm sure there are listeners that will say, well, gosh, you know, nothing could be compared to, you know, standing right there when it happened. Absolutely, absolutely. But it's interesting how even the after effects of a horrific destruction that was can have on your heart, your soul, your mind, your emotions, your everything. It is just like getting hit with a brick wall. Similar. It just is.
So when did you get the idea to compile a book of personal reflections on these terrorist attacks?
It happened that very day we were there. We were in lower Manhattan, just standing right there, literally, again, couple hundred feet, not even. I'd say maybe 70 or 80 feet from the fenced-off area of Ground Zero. Fire is still going. And we decided to go find a shop and warm up. It was very cold. And there were all the businesses were really, you know, glass shattered out. There were very few businesses that were actually in operation, obviously, due to the destruction. But there was a Starbucks a couple blocks away. And we found our way over there. And they were barely operating, but they were operating. While we were standing there waiting in line, there was a woman behind me who was just kind of your, I guess what people would describe as your typical New Yorker, just kind of talking very loud, talking very quickly, being very expressive with her hands and her emotions. And I turned around to kind of listen to what she was saying. It was obvious she was very upset. And I turned around, and she had a piece of yarn strung around her neck and hanging from the yarn. It was obvious she made a homemade little placard. She had laminated a photo of her son, and she had his name on there and the date that she had 9/11, you know, 2001 on there. She had also written above it, "Have you seen my son?" And she was lamenting about the Ground Zero, apparently the very day we were there, as God or life would have it. We were there the very day they were marking some sort of two-week or three-week commemoration of the attacks in the World Trade Center. Believe right. it or not, there were memorials happening that soon
that
after.
Soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And this woman had lost her son in the towers. He worked in the South Tower, the South Twin. And she, in spite of this memorial that Mayor Giuliani, who was still mayor at the time, putting on with Elton John and Sting and Andrew Lloyd Webber and several clergy, and it was a very formal, wonderful, if you will, memorial for mm-hmm. family members. She was very, very upset and very bitter. Obviously, the sting of death was still very
yes.
heavy upon her. I just turned around to listen to more of her story, and she said, "This is a joke. I can't believe, you know, this was just ridiculous." And she just broke down, and she almost fell into me physically, and she knelt down on the cold pavement on her knees and just wept and sobbed, and I thought, this is so tragic, you know, to feel someone's pain and misery and just
right.
the bitterness and the hopelessness. And that woman, whoever she was the one who, in my mind, got me spurred on to say, I'm going to collect people's stories. This is...
So how did you choose who you would talk to? Who you would connect with?
What I did was I went back to my Rolodex. I went back through and looked through all the people, because I'm feeling that God is always preparing us for our next work.
Yes.
And even though it may be, you know, 5 years prior or 2 years prior or whatever, whatever we're doing now is for the work we're going to be doing tomorrow. So I went back through the decade of numbers and names and people that I had interviewed and met and actually used before and prior stories for my magazine, and decided to call them. I'd already established a relationship with them. I already knew that I could maybe find out where they were on that day. And a lot of them happened to be famous people, but mm-hmm. a lot of them were everyday people as well. And they were very interested in talking about that day. It's funny how great common denominator is we all are human, and we all go through tragedy, and we all experience it in very real ways that are very common, if you will. So even if you are Donald Trump, or even if you are the Duchess of York, we're going through the same mm-hmm. pack of emotions. And that's what I found to be true.
And so in your book, you have these well-known names. Do you have some interviews with people who are not so well-known?
Yes, I have. I intentionally mixed well-known celebrity people that I knew already with everyday people, because my theory and credo in life is there's no one better or worse. It's just we choose different occupations or we live in different areas of the United States. That's all there is to it. We all put our pants on the same way, mm-hmm. bottom line. And so to me, though I'd spent a decade interviewing a lot of very famous people and knowing them and whatnot, it to me, their stories were very exciting, obviously, but they're no different than the homemaker down the street that's homeschooling kids and
yes.
running a food drive. To me, it's all the same. And I look at both of them and think they're both heroes, you know, for what they've done in their lives. So I'm not real prejudiced towards celebrity, if you will. So,
mm-hmm. Did you find some commonalities in the responses, regardless of the people's background, whether they're well-known or not, whether they had been nearby or not? Did you find some things that were coming up again and again in these interviews?
I absolutely did. I found that many people could recall with exact detail what they were doing just at that moment. So if someone was standing over their stove frying an egg, or mm-hmm. you know, they would remember that exact detail, which is kind of interesting about our human nature.
Yes.
It's how we associate and correlate and connect and remember. A lot of them had very similar thoughts and feelings about the suddenness and tragedy of the horrific event. But the end part was always very different, and that by end part I mean it either shifted people into a new consciousness or a level of thinking or a search for something spiritual, or it kind of did the opposite. And that's what I found very, very interesting about, and I guess you could even apply that to today. You know, we still have a lot of people out there still kind of searching and trying to make sense of it all.
When you had compiled all this, you obviously had to edit it down. How many people did you interview?
I initially interviewed probably 30, and I know that doesn't sound like a big, vast number, but a lot of times I would just use a handheld tape recorder to get an interview if I was in person mm-hmm. with them or on the phone. And then you'd need to go back and edit and find just the parts that would be
right.
perhaps the most interesting and compelling. So I did 30. I got it down to 20 interviews. But for this 10-year commemoration edition, which is what I've re-released,
mm-hmm.
is I've added several more stories to the 9/11 book. And these are very specific stories that I did a few years after 9/11. And they were very specific to people that their life was changed. They came to Christ as a result of 9/11.
Did you have any problem getting the book published?
That is such a great question. I'm so glad you asked. Because in the beginning, in 2001, when I was working on all this in 2002, I did go around Manhattan and meet with the largest publishers in Manhattan. You know, Harper Row and all the big Penguin
yes.
Pub, all the biggies. And all of them across the board were very, very, very nervous about publishing anything on 9/11.
Really?
Yes. Now, they ultimately did end up publishing a lot of various books by great authors about 9/11, historians and people that wrote, you know, wonderful stories about 9/11. But it took them several years to do it. I think they were all very nervous and very sensitive to the subject matter. They did not want to be perceived in any way as...
Exploiting
it, yep.
Mm-hmm. As I look at some of the world issues, Pakistan versus India, Israel-Arab conflicts, I lived in Northern Ireland where that's been going on for 300 years. In the Western world, we don't always recognize the power of religious conflicts, and we try to find geopolitical reasons for what are ultimately religious conflicts. Is there something going on with the 9/11 situation that you can extrapolate from that?
I would say this. Every time I meet someone at a book signing or do a radio interview and they call in or they contact me somehow, every individual out there wants to make 9/11 their own in their own way.
Okay.
And by that I mean each person, if they're a non-spiritual person and they're an atheist, let's say, they have their own take on 9/11 and where the spiritual person will have their take on it. And political people have their take on it. And what I found is, you know what, here's the bottom line. I'm going to whittle it down. I'm going to distill this down, okay? And for me, and for what, because I'm just kind of a basic, and we can only move from our own experiences, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, what I experienced is going to be different from what you experienced. What I experienced was 9/11 triggered in me the broken pieces of my life. And I didn't even know they were broken until 9/11 happened. And I couldn't even put words to it. I just knew that I was strangely compelled to drawn to this tragedy. Didn't know why. Didn't know anyone that lived there. I mean, other than friends. Didn't know anyone that died in the towers. But I just was consumed with it like a fervor that I've never had. And then every time I connected with it, I felt a sadness, a deep, deep, deep sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously for all the lives lost, but also there was something deeper inside of me that needed to be addressed. And the revelation came for me later when I had visited Manhattan. I was living in Manhattan covering all these stories and working on this book, and I ran into Dr. David Grand, and he's written a book about trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder and whatnot. And I write about this in the book, and I highly recommend, again, people read about this if you've ever experienced death or a death in a family, you know, a family member dying, or, you know, there is a grieving process that we have to go through. And that grieving process can lead you to, I believe, it did for me, really breaking down why I was connecting to this tragedy. And for me, it was a broken relationship with my family. And out of that came, just the awareness of that came,
mm-hmm.
I've got to get restored to my family because it hurt so bad that I'm disconnected from them, that it feels as bad as the sorrow and depths of sadness that I feel at 9/11. And that led me to a relationship with Jesus Christ.
I see.
And so, as trivial as that may sound, it's way not trivial. This is huge, because what happens is the only way a nation can be transformed is by every individual being transformed.
Yes.
Because a nation is a collection of individuals. So for our country to heal, what it takes is, spiritual.
On an individual basis.
On an individual basis. It's that simple. And I know that sounds overly simplistic, but, and obviously my book goes into great detail on all this, but to distill it down, that's the message. That's what it's about.
I'm talking with Jeanette Reynolds. She has written the book, Where Were You on 9/11? It's put out by Umbrella Publishing. Jeanette, you need to tell us how we can get your book.
It is available on Kindle, Nook, iTunes, iPad, iPhone. You can go to the website, whereweryouon911.net.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeanette, thank you so much for being on LifeQuest. I know that many will want to get a copy of your book, read the interviews, the historical material, and more about your own personal testimony of how these events brought you to Christ and to a new way of life.
Thank you.
LifeQuest is heard each week on this station. I know you'll be challenged, informed, and blessed as you become acquainted with books and authors that will enrich your journey of faith. I'm Dwight Lainhoff. Let's meet again next time for LifeQuest. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee 37930.